solve large, intractable problems.
It's a new venture altogether.
Your brain is a wild horse there.
Because remember, writing is not a team sport.
You are not selling horse carriages when there are cars.
I want to be known only as a trusted advisor.
More like a tourist.
Play to Potential Podcast.
So, you know, my learnings about storytelling don't come from the corporate world, Deepak. They come from great epics like the Ramayana and the Bible and the Mahabharata, many others. Also, non-religious epics like the Arabian Nights, and they come from great works of literature. I love reading the books of Charles Dickens. I've grown up with them. I love reading Gabriel Garcia Marquez, and I've read so many times his 100 Years of Solitude. And I love reading many, many works of fiction and history. So my learning, and I've tried to bring those learnings into business storytelling and into brand storytelling. There are three or four principles that stand out for me, and these are principles which I very much believe in.
Welcome to the 80th conversation at the Play to Potential podcast. I'm your host, Deepak Jayaraman. And this podcast is a labor of love for the long term, where I have conversations with leading practitioners, thinkers, authors, artists, sportsmen, and other leading professionals to decode insights around three themes: leadership, transitions, and careers. We started this podcast about 5 years back, and we're excited to inform that we recently crossed 1 million listens. I realize that the numbers are not stellar by popular media standards, but it's the hundreds of messages and stories that we get from listeners about how it's impacted their lives that makes this worth the while. Thank you for your support and your attention over the years. And I must mention, we feel that we're just getting started here. So look forward to your support as we continue to build this. In addition to curating this podcast, I work with leaders with a growth mindset as a trusted sounding board, helping them and their organizations transform and play to their unique potential. To know more about what's in the podcast archives and the advisory work I do, please visit playtopotential.com. That's www.playtopotential.com. My guest this time is Harish Bhatt, brand custodian of Tata Sons and an author of several books, including the recently published Hashtag Tata Stories, a collection of 40 stories from the 150 plus years of history at the Tata Group. In our conversation, we initially spoke about his journey, his choices, and his framework for making career decisions after leaving with a gold medal from IIM Ahmedabad, including how he thought about pausing to write when he completed 25 years at the Tata Group. We then go on to talk about some of the stories and some of the elements of culture at the Tata Group. I specifically found his insights around the art of storytelling and how we can shape culture through that very thought-provoking. Without further ado, let's listen and learn from Harish Bhatt of the Tata Group. Harish, thanks so much for making the time to come on the Play to Potential podcast. Excited to be talking to you.
Yes, Deepak, thank you for calling me to speak to you on the Play to Potential podcast. I am very excited and I look forward to this conversation with you.
Absolutely. Harish, in this conversation, we talk about people's journeys. The three themes we are curious about in the podcast are leadership, transitions, and careers. Maybe before we go into the book you've just written about the Tata Group and the stories, I'd love to understand your journey a little bit. And maybe just to frame the first question, it's been about 35 odd years since you've graduated with a gold medal from IIM Ahmedabad. As you think about your journey and some of the key choices you've made, Harish, what are some of the key choices you would call out in this journey?
Yeah, that's an interesting question, Deepak. So if I were to call out some of the key choices I made since I left campus at IIM Ahmedabad, the first I would call out was my decision to join the Tata Group. I didn't know too much about the Tata Group at that time, to tell you frankly, in 1987. I'd read about them, but Then I spoke to a few senior colleagues who worked with the Tata Group. But what strikes me about the choice, Deepak, is that I joined a group whose values have been greatly satisfying to me, and a group where I have been able to build a purposeful career, because I know that a lot of work I do for the Tata Group eventually goes into building the community and giving back to the nation. And I think that's a choice which will stand out for me throughout my career as being one of the finest choices I've made. That's also the reason why for the past 35 years I've been working with the Tata Group. And I love going to office each morning to complete the rest of my work with them. The other key choice I would call out, Deepak, is, you know, eventually, after an initial process of exploration, looking at different functions within corporates, eventually I veered towards marketing, consumer behavior, brands as the key area that I would like to focus on. Once again, when I left campus, I knew my passions that well. I had graduated from IIM Ahmedabad doing a plethora of courses in marketing, in finance, in information systems, and so forth. But as I started working within the Tata Group, and in those early days, it was Tata T. At a later stage, it was Titan. I discovered that I really love the art of branding and marketing. I like the science of consumer behavior. And over the course of my journey, I think I made that choice as well, that I'd like to specialize within this discipline and try my best to become a master of it. So that's the second choice that stands out. Mm-hmm. The third choice that actually stands out, Deepak, is I feel very happy that over the past 35 years, I've done my best to develop many professionals who have worked with me. And I think there is nothing more fulfilling in one's career journey than seeing people who have worked with you and developed under you, blossoming out and occupying senior roles in their own merit. So those are three important choices that I would call out.
And going back to the first choice, Harish, what else did you have as an opportunity set?
To tell you the truth, the Tata Administrative Service was the first placement that I got out of campus. So I had applied to other multinational companies as well. I had applied to a Hindustan Lever. I had applied to, a Citibank. But immediately after I got the placement at Tata Administrative Service, I dropped out of the rest of placements. I spoke to a few people, understood what the Tata Group was like at a broad level, thought that this is the kind of job I'd like to do, given the possibilities of inter-industry movement and the fact that I would be going to work with a well-reputed Indian company. So I dropped out of placement and I stuck to my choice with the Tata Administrative Service.
And picking up the arc of your career, Harish, you know, from running marketing in Tata T, running business, jewelry and watches business in Titan rather, and then Tata Consumer Products, and now you're a brand custodian of the group. Give us a sense of this arc, if you will.
So I started my career, Deepak, as the executive assistant to the then joint managing director of Tata T. His name is Mr. R.K. Krishna Kumar. He later became the vice chairman of the company and also a director of Tata Sons. After a few years in that role, I went into the marketing and sales function in Tata T, helping build our sales and distribution network. We were competing at that time against Brooke Bond and Lipton, who were then unified under the Unilever umbrella a couple of years later. So we were a small plantation company trying to build our own brands and competing against a behemoth. So that entire sequence of events, the executive assistant role gave me an overview of what a company was like, what the entire value chain in a company was like. And I could also see, you know, difficult and important decisions being made at close proximity. But the sales and marketing role in Tata T taught me that, eventually, marketing is all about common sense. It's about understanding the consumer and catering to his or her need. And if we could do that smartly enough, we could take on any large competitor. So we gained and gained market share to the extent that several years later, Tata Tea actually became the market leader in the packaged tea market in India.
Mm-hmm.
Then I transitioned to the jewelry business in Titan. The Tata Group actually sought my transfer into Tanishq at that time. It was a loss-making business when I joined it. I joined when Mr. Xerxes Desai was the managing director of the company, and directly handling the jewelry business was Jacob Kurian, the chief operating officer to whom I reported. Over the next 6 years there, Deepak, I think what came my way was the opportunity to participate in the turning around of a business. From being a loss-making business with a brand which was not very well known, we then took time to build a very robust brand in the jewelry space. Many people were skeptical of it. Many people said that India is a country of family jewelers. Building a corporate brand or a modern brand in jewelry may never be successful. But I'm very happy that, in the end, once again, through an extreme focus on the consumer and an extreme focus on our business associates and on positioning the brand very soundly, we succeeded. And I'm delighted now as I look back over the past 20 years. I mean, Tanishq just celebrated its 25th anniversary last month. Tanishq has become such a successful brand today. With the watches business, I think by the time I became the chief operating officer of the watches business, Titan was already a very strong brand. But over the next 6 years, I think building Fast Track and Sonata into very popular brands in India. Fast Track, the preferred brand of choice for Indian youth and the largest and most exciting youth brand. And Sonata, the brand of choice for, across heartland India. That was a very fulfilling voyage. Now, what all these three stints taught me, Deepak, the Tata Tea marketing and sales stint, the jewelry retailing and marketing stint, and the watches brand building stint and running the business, was, I think, a masterclass in what it takes to run a business successfully and a business which is focused on consumers. So that long stint, lasting over about 1.5 to 2 decades, was, I think, very crucial in building my understanding of consumer businesses. But it was also very crucial in my building a very good understanding of the Tata brand, what Tata stood for, as well as what it takes to build inspiration amongst people who actually operate the business. That I took a brief break. I requested Titan and the Tata Group for a brief sabbatical to write my first book, Tata Lok. And I did that because it was 25 years after I joined the Tata Group. I was inspired with many of the tales of this group. And I was also very passionate about writing. So I wanted to put it down on paper so that it could inspire many, many more people. That was in 2012. It was the year when Mr. Ratan Tata was retiring as the chairman of Tata Sons. And I also wanted to write this book as a tribute to him. Thereafter, the Tata Group asked me to take on the mantle of the managing director of Tata Consumer Products, which is then known as Tata Global Beverages. And a couple of years later, once again, the Tata Group sought my services in Tata Sons to look after the consumer and retail businesses of the group. So that's how that voyage has played out, Deepak. It's been a seamless voyage. There have been choices that I've had to make in the interim. There were choices of joining the jewelry business. There were choices of becoming chief operating officer of the watches business or becoming the managing director of Tata Global Beverages. So those are choices I've made. But in retrospect, I think I see it as a fairly seamless voyage. There have been successes and there have been failures along the way. Not every stint of mine and not everything I have done has been a success. But I think those failures have also taught me very valuable lessons.
And maybe just given you've been one large institution for a long period of time, if you had to lay out the framework through which you've made some of these transition choices. When you're, let's say, at an inflection point, right, from Tata Tea to jewelry, or from there to consumer products, how would you think about, you know, what would your advice be for people to navigate a long-term career in a large corporation? How should you think about some of these choices?
So let me tell you what I thought about during the transition from Tata Tea to jewelry, which happened in 2000. I was doing very well in Tata Tea. I was the head of marketing of the company at that stage. The brands of the company were growing. When I was offered an opportunity to run marketing and retailing in Tanishq, and jewelry was a business that I knew nothing about, but I knew marketing by then.
Mm-hmm.
Built brands like Gemini Dust, Chakra Gold, had begun the process of building Tata Tea in my role in Tata Tea. So I knew the consumer space in marketing, and in my mind, I thought those skills were transferable across businesses because marketing is marketing, whichever consumer space you go into. But I think the critical points, Deepak, which kind of helped me make the decision where in Tata Tea, I was perhaps in a zone of comfort at that time. I had handled only one category, which was tea. So I thought I was young enough at that stage to push myself into a zone of discomfort, move from a category I knew well to a category I did not know anything about, tea to jewelry. Also move from a company which was quite profitable to a business which was making losses, and one never knew if that business would continue to exist after a few years. And that move into a zone of discomfort, I think, taught me many things as a professional and a person, which have held me in good stead across my life. So one lesson, I think, for young professionals of today is don't stay for too long in a zone of comfort. If you want to learn, move into a zone of comfort, because that is when your learning curve is likely to be at its steepest. The few years that I spent in Tanishq, I learned a hell of a lot. I probably would not have learned so much if I had stayed back in Tata Tea. So if you need learning, and learning is critical to professional growth, I would say evaluate your choice and see whether you're moving to a zone of discomfort where your learning curve will probably be the steepest. The second choice, Deepak, I've made is, see, Tata is a huge organization. We have consumer and retail businesses. We have industrial businesses. We have IT services. We have infrastructure businesses, financial services businesses. The second choice I made was to stay with the consumer and retail businesses. And that is because I thought that is where my competence lies. And I wanted to build depth in the consumer and retail businesses. And that, once again, I would tell professionals, that's not a choice you should make too early in your career. But 5 or 10 years into your career, I think you also need to decide that this is the sphere, or this is the area where I will build depth, and then give it your all, which is what I have done in the jewelry business, the watches business, in Tata Tea. And which is what I am now also doing in my role as the brand custodian of the Tata Group. So I'd probably leave only those two lessons. Lesson number one, try to move into a zone of discomfort where your learning curve is the steepest. Lesson number two, based on your inclination, your passion and your interest, choose an area that you love. Choose a category that you love or an industry that you love and build depth in that industry or category.
It's a great point. And you say that even I realize you can't do it too early. Some time needs to elapse before you get clarity on that, I guess.
Yes, I tell all my younger colleagues this. Don't be in a rush to discover your passions. Meander a little bit. Work with 2 or 3 functions and understand which of them provokes you the most, which of them is most fulfilling to you. Those kind of truths, Deepak, you don't discover very easily. They take some time. And neither should you rush into them, because you may actually end up making the wrong choice.
True, true. And going back to one of the things you said, Harish, you know, around 2012, it was probably around 25 years post-graduation. You said you took a sabbatical to write the book.
Yeah.
Was it easy? You know, one of the things I notice is people, you know, just the notion of taking a pause is sort of countercultural to a lot of people. So talk to us a little bit about this notion of taking a pause and what it did to you.
Yeah, so it was not easy. You know, I was the chief operating officer of the watches business in Titan. When I took a sabbatical, I had to actually move out of that role because it was an important business for the company and it needed to be spearheaded by a very dedicated person who would give 24/7 to that role. And I had to step aside from my line operating role to write a book. The question is, why did I do it? The question, and that is because, you know, it was an urge within me. And it became an irresistible urge that there are these inspiring stories and I think I need to tell them. You know, sometimes when such an urge seizes you, there is no stopping it. So I spoke to my boss at that time, Bhaskar Bhatt in Titan. I spoke to Mr. Gopalakrishnan, who at that time was leading the brand functions at Tata Sons. I must credit the Tata Group with having permitted me to take a sabbatical of a few months to write my first book. That's one of the other things that I love about the Tata Group. I think they permit you to nurture what you think you're really good at. I had many voices ask me, you know, why is he stepping away from a chief operating officer role to write a book? Is that the right thing to do when he's virtually at the peak of his career? I think those voices will always be there, Deepak. I think it's important to pursue what you think is right. And if you're doing it with good intent, I think it always works out well. Taking a pause helped me reflect on my career until then. And taking a pause to write this book also helped me, you know, see the Tata Group in its entirety. In many ways, I think, you know, in my current role as brand custodian, I think the writing of Tata Log, my first book, which happened many years before I became brand custodian, in retrospect, I think it laid a very good foundation for my current role because I understood the Tata brand very well while writing that book. A pause in your career helps you to reflect. A pause in your career helps you to give, you know, window to a passion which you have had in your life and your career until then. A pause also helps you to rediscover yourself. I'm not suggesting that everyone take a pause in their career, but if you're really passionate about something alongside your career, it could be music, it could be writing, it could be travel, it could be any of these things. Sometimes a pause is really helpful. But you have to look at your circumstances. You have to look at, are you ready mentally to take a pause? And then you have to deep dive into it.
And moving to the brand custodian role, Harish, you know, I used to be a search consultant with Egon Zehnder in my previous life before I moved to setting up my own practice. What does good look like? How do you tell if you're adding value in the role?
It's a very broad role, Deepak, but I would say three, four things. One, if you're a brand custodian of any brand, and I'm the brand custodian of the Tata brand, one clear metric is the brand growing stronger from year to year? And in terms of brand being stronger, I'm talking of the emotional connect with our stakeholders, the functional connect with our stakeholders, the respect, admiration and love that people have for the brand that you manage. And these are metrics, Deepak, which can be tracked through brand tracks. There are brand valuation agencies which do independent tracks and report findings each year. I am, of course, delighted that the Tata brand has grown from strength to strength over the last several years and has a brand valuation of more than $21 billion today. It's by far the most valuable Indian brand. You know, and the only Indian origin brand in the top 100 in the world. We have been growing our global ranking year after year. So that is very, very fulfilling to me. So that's one metric that I would take, which is brand valuation, how brand track metrics score, and so forth. The second is all the brands which use the Tata brand name. And there are many of them in India who use the Tata brand name, Tata Tea, Tata Salt, Tata Motors, Tata Steel. I can name most recently Tata 1MG. So many of them which use the Tata brand name. I would look at how those brands are doing in terms of their appeal to consumers. Are they gaining market share? Are they becoming more competitive in the market? Of course, that's primarily driven by what each of these brands do to shore up their position. But it also reflects the strength of the Tata brand in the marketplace and with consumers. So that's a second kind of metric to which I would hold myself.
Mm-hmm.
The third is, Deepak, there are values that the Tata brand is well known for. There are values of pioneering. There are values of excellence. But most importantly is the value of keeping the community center stage and giving back to the community. And on each of these values or pillars of the Tata brand, I would examine what has happened in the year before and see whether each of these pillars is getting strengthened for the future, because Tata is an iconic brand. And, it's been around for the last 153 years and grown and prospered over the last 153 years. So when you're a custodian of a brand like that, you have to ensure that the idea on which the brand is built gets stronger and stronger and stronger as you move forward. It is contemporized for the current generation, but does not shift away from that core idea. You know, the outer layers can get contemporized, but the core idea is still the same. And have I managed to do that very well is again a yardstick to which I would hold myself. The fourth is, of course, a brand is also based on its legends and stories. That's what leads to, at the end of the day, Deepak, our lives are all about the stories of our life. And a brand is also all about the stories across the long arc of voyage that the brand has had. And more recently, I've been holding myself to account for, are the stories of the Tata brand known very well by every single Indian? Because that's why we are as a brand, Tata is very different from other modern brands which are very well respected in the world, whether it's Apple, whether it's Microsoft, whether it is, Google. I respect those brands, but the Tata brand is very different from those brands. And do our millennials, do the young people of India understand what the Tata brand is all about? Have we been successful in communicating the stories, the inspiring stories of the Tata brand to the 1.3 billion people of India? That again would be another aspect of brand building that I hold myself to account. So there are all these areas that I think are important for a brand custodian to look at. But it's a broad role; it keeps evolving from year to year.
Of course, the other piece I was curious about, Harish, was, in a way, when you're running a business, you do exert a certain control, and there are a few variables that you can play with. But in this kind of a role, I'm guessing it's heavily through influence, where you work with various business heads and marketing heads to develop the group brand as a whole. From a personal style perspective, how has this transition been? What came easy? What was hard? If you had to look at this.
Yeah, you're quite right. When you're running a company as a CEO, you have more control over all variables which reside within that company. But the good thing about the brand custodian role is, particularly with the Tata brand, is that you're managing a brand which is very well respected and admired, and all our companies want to add to that brand. So there is an alignment of interests between each of the operating companies and the Tata brand itself. Working through influence is very different from working through command and structure. Working through influence, I think, requires a few things. It requires, firstly, experience. I would say it requires a certain degree of credibility so that your voice is heard at the top table and heard across companies of the group. It requires a good amount of energy to convince people of some truth pertaining to the brand and why something should be done in a certain way and not in another way. So I would say working through influence, at its essence, I would say is intellectually very satisfying, because It is the logic of your arguments and it is your ability to persuade which actually wins or loses in the end. So I see it as an intellectual challenge, and I also thoroughly enjoy the process, because at the end of the day, I'm working with many, many Tata Group companies, which are aligned completely to the fact that we need to build the Tata brand for the future.
Got it. And going back to the art of storytelling, Harish, you spoke about stories, and we'll get to the book in a minute. But I'm curious about what you've learned about the art of business storytelling. You know, what does it take to pick a good story? What does it take to tell it well? Are there nuances that we should be aware of?
So, you know, my learnings about storytelling don't come from the corporate world, Deepak. They come from great epics like the Ramayana and the Bible and the Mahabharata, many others. Also, non-religious epics like the Arabian Nights, and they come from great works of literature. I love reading the books of Charles Dickens. I've grown up with them. I love reading Gabriel Garcia Marquez, and I've read so many times his 100 Years of Solitude. And I love reading many, many works of fiction and history. So my learning, and I've tried to bring those learnings into business storytelling and into brand storytelling. There are three or four principles that stand out for me, and these are principles which I very much believe in. One is, I think, Deepak, a corporate story cannot be dry and factual. You need to have emotion in a story for people to relate to it. If a story has no emotion to it, it's always flat. For instance, I would ask you, you know, do you remember just reams of data and facts, or do you remember a very good movie which is told in a very emotional way? So the first truth that I've discovered about business or brand storytelling is that it should have emotion to it, and it should be able to connect with the reader through that emotion. The second truth I've discovered, Deepak, is brand or business storytelling, it's not about corporates. It's about people. It's about people who build the brand. It's about people who build the business, people who have succeeded or failed, people who have overcome challenges, people who have seized opportunities. So, you know, it's about people and it's about the human spirit. Those are the kind of business and brand stories which I think readers like to relate to. So the story is about the human spirit and not really about inanimate corporate. But the human spirit brings alive the idea of that corporate and makes it a living corporate. So that's the second lesson that I've learned as I've gone along. The third lesson that I've learned is a business or a brand story has to be very simple. You know, in the corporate world, a lot of strategy, a lot of presentations become very complex and become very, there's a lot of jargon to them. In fact, many professionals take pride in the jargon. That's not how a story works. A story has to be narrated in a very simple and lucid manner where people find it easy to imbibe, easy to listen to, or easy to read. And that is very, very important in the case of business or brand storytelling. Brands which have done that very well, I think, have won in the battle of storytelling. The fourth and final lesson, Deepak, I would say, is if a business or brand story that you're narrating also holds a lesson for the reader, then I think the story really resonates. Because at the end of the day, all of us want to learn. All of us want to add value to ourselves. And if a story that you're reading can inspire you to do more with your own lives, what better? And I believe there are enough business and brand stories, not just with the Tata Group, but with many corporates across the world and in India, which are very inspiring in their own right. So therefore, if I were to summarize these four, I would say, first and foremost, the story has to have emotion in it. Second, it needs to be a story about human spirit more than just about a corporate. Of course, how the human spirit builds the corporate or the brand can still be articulated post that. The third point which I made about storytelling is that it has to be very simple and very lucid, shorn of all jargon. And that's sometimes challenging for corporate people to do. And the fourth is, if you really want it to resonate with the reader, you also need to ask yourself, what is the value add to the reader? Am I just entertaining the reader or being informative to the reader? Or am I leaving behind a lesson which will provoke the reader, inspire him or her to do something more with his or her life? So those are my learnings about business and brand storytelling that I've discovered over the years.
Fascinating. I was talking to a senior leader from the ad agency world, and he said the good stories are a bit like a homeopathy pill. He said they're sort of entertaining and engaging on the outside, but inside there is a medicine, and sometimes you don't realize, but there is a lesson, not in a preachy way, but when you sleep over it, there's something that helps you grow as a person.
Of course, I think a business or brand storyteller should also not be preachy. Preachiness turns people off.
Correct.
Our job is to narrate a story with all the facts of the case, but built to a storyline which is entrancing and which holds people's interest. And let the reader digest that story and come to a conclusion herself on what is the lesson I can take forward from here into my life. That you have to permit the reader that liberty. That is not the writer's prerogative. The writer's prerogative is to put forward the story. The reader's prerogative is what he or she wants to take out of it.
And in terms of brand stories that stand out, I'm sure there are several Tata stories. But outside of the Tata group, who do you look for? Who do you find inspiring in terms of the way they tell the story? Which brands?
So, the stories of the Tata group are the ones that most appeal to me. And that's quite natural. I've spent the last 34 years in this group and I'm greatly inspired by it. I think it's a timeless institution and there are thousands of inspiring stories over the arc of the last 153 years, which are resident within the Tata group. But, it's interesting you ask this because just yesterday I was reading another fascinating brand and business story. I was reading this book called Harsh Realities, which has been authored by Harsh Mariwala, the founder and chairman of Marico, the company which has built powerful brands like Parachute and Safola. This is a book which is co-authored by Harsh Mariwala and Dr. Ram Charan. And they tell the brand story once again beautifully, the business story of Marico. Again, it is told as the story of the human spirit. It is told as the story of what people, including Harsh, have done to build the brand. But if I look at other Indian brands, Deepak, I would say Amul tells its story really well. The story of the cooperative of milk farmers, the story of how Amul has actually added value to them, the story of how Amul knows milk best. Through many, many touch points, I think the Amul story has kind of permeated into Indian consumers' lives. So I would hold it out as another very inspiring Indian brand, which has told its story very beautifully over the past several years.
Any international brand just at the top of the pile that appeals to you?
I think a brand like Apple has told its story really well. Whether it is through the biography of Steve Jobs or whether it's about books written about Apple, I think the Apple story sits deep in the minds of many people. I think Starbucks has told its story really well. I have read some of the early books written by Howard Schultz or books written about Starbucks or how Starbucks tells its story through each touch point. I have a great amount of admiration for how Starbucks is able to authentically craft and articulate its stories.
This is your host Deepak Jayaraman here. Harish Bhatt speaks about Harsh Mariwala and the Marico story. I'm excited to share that we'll be publishing the conversation with Harsh in this podcast in a few weeks' time. In my work experience, I grew up in a management consulting context where the emphasis was on brevity, getting to the answer, and saying things as crisply as possible. Storytelling was not a muscle that was developed explicitly. So when I met Indraneel Chakraborty, the author of Stories at Work, an expert in the realm of business storytelling, I asked him about whether he thought there was a trade-off between storytelling and brevity. And this is what he said.
In fact, one of the key things I teach, and the book also talks about it, is brevity in storytelling.
And say more. I mean,
so what happens is when you have a story to tell, and because see what, why are we doing storytelling in business? We are trying to harness three big powers of story. One is stories are easy to understand. Stories are easy to remember and stories are easy to retell. Some of the things that you do not get in a business situation. How many offsites have you been to where the CEO or some senior leader has explained the next year's strategy? And then when people have come back and their teams have said, boss, what was discussed in Goa? He said, strategy for next year. What is the strategy? Oh, one PowerPoint will come. Why is it not repeatable? Because all that hours of so-called business clear with lots of brevity has not landed, right? Now, when you use stories or story structures, yeah, you get that power and you can do it in that same amount of time you would have otherwise taken, because in many cases, because of the layers of different English lines and sentences you're trying to use to explain something very simple, can be done with a story actually sometimes even shorter. So I don't see any fight between brevity, the desire for brevity and storytelling. In fact, in the work in storytelling, one of the critical things is brevity, because brevity is best delivered when there is simplicity in communication. And I love a Leonardo da Vinci quote which said, simplicity is the ultimate sophistication. Yeah. And so when you are able to get very simple with your message, you're not going to be long with it. But that simple, tight story will deliver much more than what a long paragraph of a lot of huge English words would have managed to do.
If you want to tune into more of this, you might find the conversation with Indraneel Chakraborty of value. You might also like the curated playlist on storytelling, where several thinkers and practitioners speak about their take on the role of storytelling in business and in life. If you find the podcast of value, do take a moment to rate and review on Apple Podcasts, Google or Spotify, wherever you consume the content. I also wanted to bring to your attention a social cause that I'm associated with. I've had the opportunity to spend time with Saurabh Taneja, an IIT Delhi graduate, a Teach for India fellow, who's now the CEO of Akanksha Foundation. For over 30 years, Akanksha has educated children from low-income communities across Mumbai and Pune. I was speaking with Saurabh recently, and he shared an exciting project around Heart for Art. If you're deriving value from the podcast, it would be great if you could take a moment and contribute to this cause. Here's Saurabh giving a little more context around this initiative.
As you know, we at Akanksha Foundation run 27 schools today in Mumbai, Pune and Nagpur, all in partnership with the city government, and are currently serving nearly 11,000 children and 4,000 alumni. We at Akanksha have always believed in the potential of every child, no matter what background they come from, and we are tremendously proud of our alumni and what they have achieved today. And Deepak, I really wanted to share with you this unique initiative that our team thought of last year at the time of school closure, called Heart for Art, where we sent an art kit to every single child's home during the pandemic. It was meant with the purpose that every child has an opportunity to express themselves through art, which has always been an integral part of Akanksha's curriculum. And the pieces of the work that students have produced have just blown all of us away. And, you know, that's why we've launched this really exciting campaign, hashtag Heart for Art, Deepak, where we are seeking funds for our most urgent three priorities today. You know, the first is to buy tablets for some of our younger students who still continue to be at home and will still have an interrupted school year, looking by the plans for the reopening this year. Second is to put our alumni through to a college. And the third is supporting a child's education in an Akanksha school. And through each of these initiatives, the contributor will have an opportunity to own the piece of the beautiful art that our students have produced, along with that, the backstory of what got them to produce it.
To know more, you can just go to akanksha.org/heart4art. The spelling is akanksha.org/heart-4art. Let's now get back to the conversation with Harish Bhatt. Harish, changing track from your journey to the book that you've just written, #TataStories, 40 Timeless Tales to Inspire You. Give us a sense of the why behind the book. Why did you choose to write this book? And more importantly, you know, there are thousands of stories across 150 plus years that one could have picked from. I'm guessing it must have been a real challenge to get to the 40 that you did. Give us a sense of the why the book and also how you arrived at this super shortlist.
So why the book is a very interesting question, Deepak. The writing of this book happened in the first 10 months of the pandemic in 2020. So the pandemic came upon us, I think, quite unannounced and also quite unwelcome into our lives. And like many others, I was also stuck at home, working out of home. You know, the reason I began writing the first few stories, when I still did not have the notion that they would become a book later, was because the pandemic has been a very challenging period for the whole of humanity and for many Indians. And I thought to myself, you know, there are many inspiring stories sitting within the Tata Group. And at this point in time, stories which elevate our minds, stories which inspire us, will probably be welcomed by readers across the country or even across the world. Hmm. And I thought to myself, there are so many of these stories sitting within the Tata Group, why don't I start narrating a few of them? I still remember the first story that I wrote. It was the story of Lady Meherbhai Tata. And I posted it on LinkedIn after writing it, with a preface saying that, here's an elevating story from the Tata Group. I hope it inspires you, particularly at this time of the pandemic. What happened after that, Deepak, surprised me. As I posted a few of these stories, the reader response was fabulous. Several hundred readers would spontaneously respond on LinkedIn with their comments and insights. People told me they were inspired by these stories. They used the first four or five stories that I Tata stories that I published. Readers used beautiful words such as pride, goosebumps, motivation, astonishment, joy to describe their reactions. Now, I remember one early reader writing about these stories. He said, "What a stunning story. It inspires me to do a lot more with my own life." And another reader, a young woman professional, said that she has begun reading out these stories to her daughter. Her young daughter, who is about 6 or 7 years of age, to my 4-year, she said, "Today I tell Tata stories to my 4-year daughter." And she says it helps them to value the qualities of true readers and look at what a life with honesty is like. And she said her daughter has many questions to ask her in each story. So that kind of encouraged me, Deepak, to write many more stories. And eventually, when I had written 40 to 50 of them, there was keen interest from Penguin Random House to publish all these stories together as a book so that the reach is not held up only to the platform of LinkedIn, but can go to a much wider audience. So, equally, this is also part of my role as brand custodian of Tata Sons. I have to take the lead in propagating the inspiring stories of our group and our brand and making sure that enough people know these stories and are inspired by these stories. So that is the why of how #TataStories came about, Deepak. And the book was published in June this year, June 2021. And I'm really amazed by the love and affection and wide readership that it has gained across the country. Virtually every day there are people writing into me or writing on LinkedIn, commenting on the book, saying how it has inspired them. So, you know, I've only been an instrument of narration of these stories. What is at the root of this is that there are such inspiring stories within the group. And I must also give due credit to the Tata Central Archives and my colleague Rajendra Prasad Narla, who is the chief archivist there, for helping me research these stories and helping me bring out some little known facts through which I could narrate these stories. So that's the why of why the book hashtag Tata Stories was written. How did I pick these 40 timeless tales? I must be very frank with you there. It is true that there are hundreds of these stories across the Tata Group. And to tell you the truth, like I have said in the introduction to this book, you know, I picked the stories which have appealed most to my imagination based on my current knowledge. So I do not claim that hashtag Tata Stories as a book is comprehensive. It certainly is not. I have chosen to narrate a set of 40 Tata Stories which I think appeal greatly. But I have no doubt that there are many more equally inspiring stories within the Tata Group with us which are still waiting to be told. And the stories within hashtag Tata Stories within this book are not narrated in any particular chronological order. Narrated in a sequence which takes you back and forth over the years. But as you read them, as you read all these Tata stories, you realize that there's a glue which binds them. And that glue is the values of the Tata Group and the pillars on which the Tata brand stands.
I think the one thing that strikes the reader when I read this book, Harish, is just this notion of making a difference to the world, right? Even recent top 50 givers list prepared by Hurun Report and Edelgive Foundation, Jamshedji Tata has emerged as the biggest philanthropist globally in the last century. And they'd put a number like 102 billion in terms of the amount that's been given. What got me curious was, how does the group across its various companies drive this vision of impacting the wider community where the group operates?
So, the community is truly center stage at the Tata Group, Deepak. And Jamshedji Tata, our founder, articulated that vision when he said he wants to build a corporation or an institution where the community is center stage and not just another stakeholder. Now, his sons and he created the Tata Charitable Trust. The J.N. Tata Endowment Trust was created by Jamshedji Tata himself in 1892 for the overseas education of Indians. The Sir Ratan Tata Trust was created by one of his sons, and the Sir Dorabji Tata Trust was created by his elder son, Dorabji Tata. And there have been other Tata charitable trusts as well. But what is unique is that, you know, these trusts have owned and continue to own a large majority of the equity shares in our parent company, Tata Sons. Today, about 66% of the equity capital of our parent company, Tata Sons, is held by these charitable trusts. What does that mean? What it means is 66% of the dividends issued by Tata Sons go to the Tata Charitable Trust, which then use this money to contribute back to the community. So over the course of the past 100 years, the Tata Trusts have used this money to build institutions such as the Tata Memorial Hospital, the Tata Institute of Social Sciences, the Tata Institute of Fundamental Research, NCPA, the National Center for Performing Arts. And of course, right at the beginning, Jamshedji Tata used his own personal wealth to also build the Indian Institute of Science in Bangalore, which is one of the finest universities in the world today. So there are many such institutions of national importance, which have contributed back to our community, which has been built by these Tata Trusts over a long period of time. So even now, as we speak, the Tata Trusts are leading the fight against cancer. The Tata Medical Center came up in Kolkata in 2012. And just now, the Tata Trusts are working with the several state governments in India. We're building cancer hospitals in those states. So this includes cancer facility networks that are coming up in Assam, Odisha, Jharkhand, Telangana, and Nagaland. Cancer research and treatment centers coming up in Varanasi, Tirupati, Bhubaneswar, Ranchi, Allahabad, and Mangalore. So that's one way through. And of course, in the more recent past, the fight against COVID-19. where the Tata Trusts have partnered with Tata Sons to contribute a very significant amount. You know, right at the beginning of the pandemic, 1,500 crores was committed to the fight against the pandemic. So the ownership structure of the Tata Group, where the Tata Charitable Trust owns 66% of the parent company Tata Sons, is one way by which the Tata Group gives back to the community. The second is each of our companies also give back to the community in their own right. And let me illustrate this by two or three examples. Mm-hmm. For instance, with Tata Steel. Tata Steel manages the town of Jamshedpur, one of the best run towns in the country. But in addition, Tata Steel is also doing a lot to uplift the lives of tribals in that entire region of eastern India. But let me take a very different example. Let's take an example of Tata Chemicals. Tata Chemicals operates in the Okhamandal region of Gujarat, a very, very dry region of this country. And once again, inhabited by the Rabdi tribals and many other tribal communities. Tata Chemicals has put in place a Tata Chemicals Foundation for the development of these communities. And one outcrop of that is a brand like Okhai, which is a brand of garments based on the weaving skills and the visual skills and the handicraft skills of the Rabdi tribals of that area. I've actually written the story of Okhai is one of the 40 stories in hashtag Tata Stories, a very moving story to read. But a third way I would say is look at a brand like Tata Tea. Tata Tea over the years has built a very powerful platform called Jagore, which is about civic consciousness. Initially, it was positioned against corruption. Later, it was positioned in the area of encouraging women to vote. In the more recent past, it has been positioned as things that you can proactively do in your community to encourage sports people, for instance. So that whole thread of, let's say, civic consciousness is what Jagore has been able to build. And that is also contributing back to the community. Or if I look at Tanishq, a jewelry brand, which I've been associated with for many years. Tanishq, of course, markets beautiful jewelry and is by far the best known brand of jewelry in India. But did you know that they also do a lot to support jewelry karigars, the artisans who actually produce jewelry? They give them hygienic working conditions. They ensure that they are paid fairly and in time. They have set up jewelry or karigar parks across the country. So those are examples of how our companies contribute to the community. So I would say there are three predominant methods through which the Tata Group's contribution to the community happens. One is through the Tata Charitable Trust, which are majority owners of Tata Sons. And the fight against cancer is a story which I have narrated in my book, hashtag Tata Stories, which pertains to that part of community contribution. The second is through the CSR work, which a lot of our companies do in communities in and around them, like, for instance, the work that Tata Steel or Tata Chemicals do with the tribal communities that live in their hinterlands. The third is the work that the Tata brands do. You know, either Tanishq or Tata Tea, I give you examples of the Karigar Parks or the Jagore platform. And this work could be at the back end or it could be at the front end communication, which once again goes towards serving the community.
And
so it's a combination of all these through which the Tata Group tries its best to give back to the community. You know, in the words of JRD Tata, a lot of stories in hashtag Tata Stories are about JRD Tata, who was chairman of the group for 50 years. And in one of his most, resonant words, he says, what comes from the people goes back to the people over and over again. I think that has been a guiding philosophy of the group.
And sticking with this for a couple of minutes, Harish, at the highest level, Tata Trust, serving social causes, it's structurally set up to do that. But at a company level, given there's a profit objective that a lot of the leaders are going after, how do you ensure that while pursuing profit, they don't lose sight of this community piece? How's it handled at the company level?
I think it is in most, if not all, Tata Group companies, Deepak, community is inbuilt into the DNA of a company. I think many, many of our group companies understand that that is the reason why we were established. It's not an either-or situation. I think you build a very profitable business based on sustainable competitive advantages, which varies from industry to industry. But you also ensure that part of those profits go towards nurturing the community around you. And I would say that's a positive spiral. Because you nurture the communities around you and you live in harmony with the communities around you, there is also a great deal of respect which builds up for the brand. And that respect then translates into customer affection also.
The other quote that stuck with me in the book, Harish, in one of the stories you speak about Gandhiji coming to Jamshedpur in August 1925.
Yeah.
And in his speech, you quote that Gandhiji says, "My identification with labor does not conflict with my friendship with capital." And when I think about the Tata Group, in a way, it seems to straddle these two worlds effectively. Can you talk a little bit about how the group walks the tightrope?
So firstly, let me stay on the story you just mentioned of Gandhiji in Jamshedpur. I really enjoyed researching and then narrating the story. I enjoyed reading the long speech that he delivered in Jamshedpur and why he went to Jamshedpur and what he saw there and what he said. You're quite right. One of the quotes is what you mentioned just now, that even though I've been obliged to range myself seemingly against capital, capitalists have in the end regarded me as their true friends. And he says, "My identification with labor does not conflict with my friendship with capital." But there is another powerful quote in the same story, Deepak, which has sat deeply in my mind. And this is the, towards the end of the speech that Gandhiji delivered in Jamshedpur in 1925. He says, "May God grant that in serving the Tatas, you will also serve India and will always realize that you're here for a much higher mission than merely working for an industrial enterprise." What a powerful statement that is. You know, it must have moved every member of the Tata Steel family who was present in Jamshedpur listening to Gandhiji that day. And it moves me and many of my colleagues in the Tata Group even today. So that's a beautiful story, Gandhiji in Jamshedpur. I think all of you who are listening to this podcast, even if you read one story in the book or two stories in the book, read the story of Jamshedji Tata and Swami Vivekanand. Read the story of Gandhiji in Jamshedpur. These are two amongst many stories in this book which exemplify what the Tata Group is all about and why it has, continued to do very well and prosper on its voyage.
And maybe just exploring that quote, identification with labor and conflicting does not conflict with the friendship with capital. I'm curious about where you see the tension, Harish, in the day-to-day workings of the group.
So I think, Deepak, let me go to another story from hashtag Tata Stories to actually explain that. And why where is the tension and how the tension can be resolved. And let me go to story number 8, the crash at Empress Mills.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the Empress Mills was the very first industrial enterprise established by Jamshedji Tata. It happened in the year 1874. So it was a long time, before us. It opened on the 1st of January 1877, more than 140 years ago. Empress Mills soon became a very, very profitable business enterprise. Why? Because Jamshedji Tata decided to use the highest quality of cotton. He established this mill in Nagpur, which was in the midst of the cotton growing area. Therefore, the quality of the products that he produced was widely respected from this textile mill. The second thing that he also did was he innovated. He brought in place many manufacturing innovations which were not even being used in the UK at that time. For instance, he brought in place the ring spindle, which substantially improved the output of the factory. And so Empress Mills became a very profitable enterprise. However, what he did simultaneously, so that was the use of capital, I would say. He used capital very wisely, or in today's today's phraseology, his capital allocation to the right things within the mill made it a very profitable enterprise. And if you look at profits alone, by 1920, the total profits of the Empress Mills were 50 times the original capital. Shareholders had gained splendidly, and so forth. But what Jamshedji Tata also did is that he pioneered a number of initiatives for worker welfare in the Empress Mills. In 1887, he introduced a pension fund, the first of its kind in India. 1895, he established an accident compensation fund for its workers. 1901, he introduced something that all of us take for granted in India today. He introduced for the first time ever in the country a provident fund scheme for his workers. He introduced gymnasia for his workers. He introduced a creche. Empress Mills established a creche a few years later for the children of it, the women who work within Empress Mills.
Mm-hmm.
And he was asked to explain why he was investing so much in worker welfare. And speaking in 1895, perhaps the only long speech of Jamshedji Tata which I have cited my eyes on, he said, "We do not claim to be more unselfish, more generous, or more philanthropic than other people. But we think we started on sound and straightforward business principles, considering the interests of our shareholders are our own." Note what he says. "The interests of our shareholders are our own, and the health and welfare of our employees the sure foundation of our prosperity." So, if you look at this statement, which was made more than 140 years ago, you see the equal emphasis on making capital work well for shareholders and at the same time giving back to employees and making that the sure foundation of our prosperity. That is the philosophy which I think Deepak has been running through the Tata Group. Even today, if the Tata Group is known as a corporation which is fair to its employees and takes care of its employees, it is also known as a business corporation which delivers splendid shareholder returns to its shareholders. So empirically, over the last 153 years, I think the voyage of the Tata Group is proof enough that there is no inherent conflict between capital, the use of capital, in the most efficient manner, and ensuring that some of the benefits of that efficient use of capital flow back to the people who have actually made that happen. I think 153 years is a long time for empirical proof points.
True. The other thing that struck me, Harish, while reading the various stories was just noticing the phenomenal diversity in the number of businesses and ventures Tata Group is in. Right, motors, steel, software, watches, cancer treatment, sericulture, beverages, retail, chemicals, communications, air conditioning, and I'm sure I'm not even scratching the surface of the entire list. How does, given that you have a sort of a group-wide view now, how does the group think about core competence? In a sense, you know, you spoke about how you drew your sphere, saying consumer goods, right, and you sort of operated within it. But as a group, how does a group think about, you know, what is the canvas that it will play in and not play in?
You know, our group website talks about this, and our group chairman has spoken about it a few times. There are specific industry sectors in which we are present, where we try to develop and have developed deep competence. There is IT services, there is steel, there is motors or automobiles, there is consumer and retail. There is the infrastructure and defense sector. There is financial services. So there's a choice the group has made on the business sectors that it has to be present in. And in those business sectors, it takes all efforts to ensure that we develop deep competence and offer our customers, I think, exceedingly good products and services at very good value. So that choice is made by the board of Tata Sons, which considers capital allocation across these industry sectors for now and in the future. So in the most recent past, you might have heard our chairman speak about the digital ventures, which the group is now getting into. That's a capital allocation choice which the group is making for the future, because digital is soon going to become the default way for many, many millions of Indian consumers and for a lot of Indian society. I think the group has also consistently over its history made choices about the businesses that it does not want to be present in. And that's also clear to us from a capital allocation perspective. So you'll find certain kinds of businesses which the group has never entered and will probably never enter in the future either.
And just changing track a little bit before coming back to your book, Harish, clearly there is a role of stories in the way consumers think about a brand. Stories also help in building culture in a company and in driving a certain set of values. What have you learned about the internal application of stories, if you will? What are the 3-4 things companies need to bear in mind to get that right?
What do you mean by the internal application of stories?
In the sense, within the Tata Group, there is, I realize there's a certain discipline in the way stories are shared in different forums, the way the stories are, what are the topics around which you share stories? There's an opportunity to be deliberate about how we use stories as a vehicle for transmitting values, transmitting culture, from what I see. So I was wondering if that's a piece that's worth talking about.
If you take hashtag Tata Stories and this book, Deepak, the stories fall into 3 categories. The stories, there are stories of pioneers who have broken new ground, entered new industries, gone through tribulations of entering new industries and eventually made successes of them. So there are stories of pioneering. Mm-hmm. There are stories of excellence. If you look at J.R.D. Tata and his complete focus on excellence, or Nani Palkhivala, those are stories of excellence. Whereas stories of pioneering are stories of Jamshedji Tata and his quest for an integrated steel plant in India, or stories of Ratan Tata and his quest for India's first indigenous car, or stories of J.R.D. Tata and his quest for India's first commercial airline. So there are stories of pioneering, there are stories of excellence, and there are stories of giving back to the community in this book, Deepak. If you look at hashtag Tata Stories, there are stories about the fight against cancer. There are stories of the establishment of the Tata Institute of Fundamental Research, or the Indian Institute of Science, or NCPA. So most of the stories within the Tata Group, which are consumed either externally or internally, are around these 3 very powerful pillars. They're around pioneering, around excellence, and around community. Because authentically, these are the 3 pillars which have stood the Tata brand aloft. So I would say one important lesson for me is, different brands may have different pillars and different brands may have different ideals holding them up. But it is very, very important for a brand to be authentic to what it stands about and have a discipline of narrating those stories which are authentic to the idea of the brand and which are true to the idea of the brand. So that is one discipline that the Tata Group always bears in mind. The second thing that we bear in mind, Deepak, is that the legends of the Tata Group, such as Jamshedji Tata, our founder, such as J.R.D. Tata, who was our chairman for 50 years, a lot of our principles are derived from them. So, to be true to that, what we do is, on the 3rd of March, we celebrate Founders Day, which was Jamshedji Tata's birthday. On the 29th of July, we celebrate J.R.D. Tata's birthday. And we use those days also to reflect on the stories of these giants on whose shoulders we stand today. So that's also a discipline that the group pursues every single year. Both 3rd March and 29th July are sacred dates on our calendar where stories of these legends are celebrated and we pay tribute to them once again.
This is your host Deepak Jayaraman here once again. Another institution that does a great job of storytelling is the Armed Forces. Here's Captain Raghu Raman speaking about the power of stories in building culture in a unit.
And I think how the forces do it is by storytelling, by creating a narrative of that organization, which is so strong and so powerful that anytime a person puts on that uniform and he has got that shoulder badge of whatever it may be, Jat Regiment, Rajput, Bihar, Rashtriya Rifle, you know, 22 MEC, the moment you adopt that, you know, you sort of put on that, you know, clothing on yourself and you become part of that unit, you also are immersed into the legends of that unit. So, for example, one of the rituals that happens in a battalion is, as soon as new soldiers are commissioned in, and they may come in a batch of, say, 15 to 20 or 30 or whatever, they are actually taken around the officer's mess and the quarter guard, and they're shown all the trophies. And every narrative is, so to retrieve this flag, we lost 30 people in that battle. To recover the dead body of one of our comrades, we launched 7 attacks and we lost several more in the process, but we did not let a body of one of our soldiers behind. Now, by the time you listen to the third or the fourth or the fifth story, I mean, your hair is standing on its end and you realize that you are in a temple. This is not you are in the presence of your ancestors who have left this legacy behind, and that's the expectation from you.
If you're interested in receiving short 2 minutes extracts of wisdom from the podcast, served up 1 or 2 times a week, consider signing up by sending a WhatsApp message at +91 85914 52129. I repeat, the number is +91 85914 52129. Here we share short extracts from various guests and themes that we have at the podcast archives. Typically, it's one small extract on a Saturday and once in a while on a Sunday. Now, let's get back to the conversation with Harish Bhatt. One of the stories that caught my attention in the book, Harish, was the one of J.R.D. Tata, an ASPE engineer, responding to the challenge set out by His Highness the Aga Khan, yep, for the first Indian to fly between England and India. And, you know, there's a segment around the spark plug, which was fascinating for me. Without breaking the suspense, I'd love for you to share a little bit of context around the story and maybe just to ask the following on question as well. You know, the story is about competing yet collaborating. So if you could give us a sense of the story and, you know, what it means to the Tata Group in the way it operates its businesses.
So I think, you know, let me not take away from the suspense of the story. I think listeners should, you know, read the story yourself. That's the way it would best come to life. But this was a race, you know, announced by the Aga Khan way back in 1930 for the person who would complete the fastest solo flight between India and England in that year. J.R.D. Tata was one of the competitors in the race, and ASPE engineer, a young Parsi boy, was the other competitor in the race. And there was a third competitor called Manmohan Singh as well. Exciting story, because you'll see the way each of these people proceeded on their voyage. ASPE engineer was actually flying from England to India. J.R.D. Tata was flying from India to England. So J.R.D. Tata took off from Karachi. ASPE engineer took off from London. And you could go either way on the race. The pivotal point is actually a point at which ASPE engineer and J.R.D. Tata meet somewhere in Egypt, in an airfield. In the midst of their respective voyages. And J.R.D. Tata asks ASPE engineer, what are you doing here? Why is your flight parked here? And why are you not moving forward? And ASPE engineer tells him that, listen, my spark plugs have malfunctioned, so I'm waiting for other spark plugs to come, but that may take some time. In the middle of Egypt, you don't get spark plugs that easily. And then J.R.D. Tata actually offers ASPE engineer some of his own spark plugs so that ASPE engineer does not need to wait and can take off quickly. ASPE engineer wins that race by a couple of hours. J.R.D. Loses that specific race. But both of them win friends for life. And I'm not going to narrate the second half of the story here, because we'll be taking away, let's say, the thunder from the story if I do that. But as you read the latter half of this of that story, it's really heartwarming to see where their friendship led to. Because over the course of the next 40 or 50 years, both became great sons of India. J.R.D. Tata became chairman of the Tata Group and you know, a legend in the country. And ASPE engineer became the, you know, Air Chief Marshal, the head of the Indian Air Force, and himself became a legend amongst the Air Force and the armed forces and across the nation. So they were competing with each other, but they also collaborated with each other. And D.R.D. Tata calls it one of the most fulfilling experiences of his own life as he reflects on that adventure.
And I love the way you say it. He lost that specific race, right? I think, and that's the perspective that's helpful to have.
See, I believe in life, it is not important to win every specific race. It is important to win the races which are truly meaningful and where you're adding value to the company you're part of, the people you're working with in a very meaningful and significant way. It is, and winning a race in a graceful, gentlemanly way. You can be competitive yet gentlemanly. Winning a race which is competitive, yet you do it in a very graceful, gentlemanly way, I believe are some of the best races that you can win.
On that note, Harish, this podcast is titled Play to Potential.
Yep.
What does this term mean to you? How have you thought about playing to your full potential at various points in time?
So, what I would take out from it, Deepak, is each of us is born with some talents, and there are other talents that we develop in our life, other capabilities that we develop in our life. So, for instance, at this point in my career and my life, I know I have certain capabilities to bring to bear in the sphere of marketing, brand building, and consumer behavior. I also know I have capabilities in the area of writing and storytelling. And, as I outlook my life in the years ahead, I'm now 59 years of age. So as I outlook the next 15 or 20 years of my life, I would ask myself, am I going to leverage these capabilities that I have to the best of my ability? Am I going to reach the potential which I can, say, achieve by using these capabilities in the best possible manner? That's what play to potential means. It means each of us has inherent potential which we can build on. And since we live life just once, how do we use that potential to its fullest is, what I got out of play to potential. That requires focus, it requires energy, it requires discipline, but it also requires creativity and lateral thinking. Most importantly, I think it requires, a purpose that you work towards in your life, and how do you use your capabilities to help realize that purpose, which can make life very fulfilling to you. So that's what the theme Play to Potential means to me.
Got it. Harish, it's been a pleasure having you on the podcast. Thank you so much for being generous with your time.
Thank you, Deepak. It's been a pleasure speaking with you. And to all your listeners, I would urge you, if you have not already read hashtag Tata Stories, this is my invitation to you to pick up the book and read it. Many, many stories in this book will provoke you, will inspire you, will probably even move you to more meaningful action in your own lives. Thanks a lot for this conversation.
Absolutely. Thank you, Harish. Thank you for listening. I hope you found the conversation purposeful. A couple of messages before we wrap up. If you're interested in receiving short 2 minutes extracts of wisdom from the podcast, served up one or two times a week, do consider signing up by sending a WhatsApp message at +91 85914 52129. I repeat, the number is +91 85914 52129. Here we share short extracts across the various guests and themes we've had at the podcast. Typically, it's about one small extract a week on a Saturday. Do also rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or wherever you consume the content. It might seem like a repetitive ask, but trust me, it makes a big difference to us. In terms of people discovering this podcast amidst a lot of noise out there, given the boom in the podcast supply in India and around the world in the last few months. It also helps us attract good quality speakers who look at some of these metrics when they make up their mind on where they want to spend their time and attention. As mentioned earlier, do take a moment to visit www.akanksha.org/heart-for-art to see how you can contribute to the education of children from low-income communities and help them play to their potential. To know more about what's in the podcast archives and the advisory work I do, you could just visit playtopotential.com. Thank you, and hope to have you tune into one of the subsequent conversations of the podcast. Bye now.